Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
1077 The Bronx, 1077thebronx.com. Proudly nominated for a National Association of Broadcasters 2019, 2021, and 2022 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station, and the winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Welcome to Health 411. I'm your professor host. I'm your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. How about that? I had a little vodka at lunch, and it's taking its effect. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health. In Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and perspective. Today, Daniel Geller, our undergraduate student producer, and I are joined by Troy Bannister. Troy is the CEO of Particle Health, based in New York. And welcome to Health 411, Troy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you here. I think the best way to start our conversation, none of which has been scripted, is to first ask, what is Particle Health? What do you guys do? And I will follow that up so you can get the gears going about how you got involved with this company and how you sort of founded it. So what is Particle Health and what part of healthcare are we talking about today?
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I can assure you this is non-scripted.
This is all
solid.
Good.
30 second, nice to meet you. Let's hop into some questions.
Absolutely.
This session off, I love it. So what is Particle? The mission that we're on is to get everybody's medical histories together in one place, affordably, quickly, and easily. Today, what we've essentially done is built connections into every electronic medical record service out there, health information networks, pharmacies, labs, you name it. We're building that infrastructure that allows for us to have a single place where you can go get all of your healthcare information and share it with any third party that you want. So the analogy people often look at is a company called Plaid, if you're familiar. If you don't know Plaid,
familiar with Plaid. So if you can explain that, that'd be wonderful.
This is my favorite answer because okay. I'm sure you might have used a Venmo before, right? To send $5 at your bank account to $5 at your friend's bank account. Venmo wouldn't exist without Plaid. Plaid did all that backstage work of connecting all the banks together. And so they allow you to download a single app and have all of your banking information and data flow to it and back from it. This is what we're building in healthcare, is the same type of platform that will enable things like the Venmo of health.
Cool.
Things that need your medical information to go in and out and all around. And so that is what we've essentially built today.
Now, I might be wrong on this. The laws that allowed Plaid to work, if I remember, that came about somewhere around in the Obama administration-ish. Am I about right with that?
So this was Plaid in the finance space, yes. Okay. The analogy to the healthcare side is correct. Obama's last act out of office
okay.
was called the 21st Century Cures Act. And within the Cures Act was a rule called the anti-information blocking provision. And like it sounds, it's saying, hey, these healthcare groups that are blocking access to information cannot do that anymore. And so they're really pointing a finger at hospitals and EMRs, mostly EMRs, that are housing all of your clinical data, but not easily making it available to you or groups that you need it to get to.
So
this rule okay. is now maturing.
So it sounds to me like when I go to a physician, even when I've been there many, many times, I have to spend the first 15 minutes of my appointment filling out forms, answering questions, doing exactly the same thing that I've done the previous 10 times that I've been there. you're nodding.
Tip of the iceberg of the problem, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so Particle Health then is the idea that you're going to create sort of an electronic repository of everybody's records? Is that sort of the idea?
So we actually don't just hold everybody's records.
Okay.
We connect into the source systems. So every time you go to your provider or download an app, we will go fetch your most up-to-date information directly from the source and bring it right into that practice, clinic, or application that you downloaded.
So the idea that if I go to a physician who's associated with some medical practice in the local hospital, that what he's typing into the system is proprietary and can't get out of the system. And I sort of like your analogy of the banking things. If I have a bank account at a local bank, a community bank, or a brokerage firm, you're right, I can link all those things now if I wanted to.
Right.
And so that's what Particle Health is all about. Pretty cool.
That's right. We're bringing all your medical data together and creating one golden record and getting it anywhere you want it to go.
Okay. So this is very interesting to me because I'm a pharm tech and I saw your website, hashtag kill the fax machine, right? I love that. I think we need that completely. But a lot of like the barriers we face with like transferring patient information has to do with HIPAA. How do you kind of circumvent HIPAA when you're connecting all of these like accounts together?
Well, the funny thing is we're actually not circumventing it. We're actually embodying it, right? The P in HIPAA, people think often refers to as privacy. It actually stands for portability. The whole design behind HIPAA was to create easy ways to exchange data for certain use cases and then make it harder for other use cases, right? And so when you're treating a patient or you're, you know, facilitating a claim from an insurance company, that should be really easy just to pop your data back and forth or have somebody else do it for you. And so HIPAA has actually been a barrier where it should have been an accelerant to making data more portable. And so we're not circumventing data at all. In fact, we're actually giving you more control over where you do and do not share it.
Well, that's interesting. And so Particle Health is a relatively new company, is it not? How long you guys
been
around?
Well, it defines what you mean by new. I've been working on this for about four and a half years. I wouldn't call it a real company until maybe 3 years ago.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna give you some perspective. So I'm the oldest guy in the room, and I did check out your website too, and you have pictures of the people who work at Particle Health with you. And I remarked to Dan, what did I say, Dan?
You said they're all under 40.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So my perspective for relatively new is a little might be a little different than yours. But it's a relatively new thing with a lot of young, probably highly motivated, bright people. How did, like, what was your background to sort of be one of the co-founders of this thing?
So I've been in healthcare my whole life. When I was 17, I became an EMT and was working in an ambulance through high school and college. I fell in love with it. And so I actually ended up switching to pre-med in undergrad, which was very difficult. But I made it through and I actually got into, you know, graduate level medical school. And about a year into that, I realized I did not want to be a physician. And I always joke, you can call my mom if you want to hear more about this story. but I ended up dropping out of and getting a master's degree in biophysics and physiology.
Okay.
I took that and I ended up doing clinical research at Mount Sinai here in New York. And it was when I was there, they were starting to talk about this concept they called mHealth, which stood for mobile health. And it was essentially just using your cell phone in like the care continuum. And we were doing these really simple things like text message based medication reminders. And we were showing that people took their meds more and were showing up at the ER less. And so I thought, oh my gosh, the cell phone is so underutilized in healthcare. And this is, you know, back in 2011, 2012. And so I ended up joining a small venture capital firm out here in New York, and we were investing in early stage digital health companies. And that's where I kind of crystallized the problem, right? There's over the last 5 years, there's probably been, I'm going to totally butcher this number, but maybe 10,000 or so startups in the digital health space that have really popped up in earnest.
Okay.
None of them have clinical data or the ability to capture a person's medical history. And so how do you build a new innovative tool, right, that manages diabetics or cancer patients if you don't know what meds they're on, or you don't know what comorbidities they have, or you don't know how old they are? And so this concept of, if you can get the patient's medical history into a organization, then they can use it to create innovative things that result in better patient experiences, better patient outcomes. They use AI, ML, whatever. So this kind of push into that is really the story.
So in the financial world, which was your analogy, I assume that like financial records are all sort of kept sort of the same way with the language of general accounting principles. In the world of healthcare, I can imagine all these healthcare systems that are around now organize their data in very different ways. Is there a standard way of storing that stuff that just shows up on the screen with a different, you know, interface for the different companies? Or I'm trying to, because what you have to tackle is getting access to the data and then assembling it in a form that's usable.
You're spot on. So the classic healthcare, you know, nobody follows any rules. So every record we get on every patient has some variation or difference to it. There's different standards, different versions, different formats. So we have built a data transformation pipeline that can standardize anything really that comes into us. So we take in many, many different versions, format standards, and we pump out one single version and standard. And that standard is called FHIR, F-H-I-R, and it stands for Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, which is kind of a technical term for the standard. And it's just an instructional way of how you organize that data. So we do that today, and that means cleaning the data, deduplication, semantic normalization, unstructured to structured data, a lot of doctor's notes that you can't just use out of the gate. So you have to structure those things. So there's a lot of work to do just to make the data usable.
Right. So to decode it, decode the hieroglyphics that are in the system. I want to come back and we're going to take a break from our conversation with Troy Bannister, CEO of Particle Health. But we're going to break for some underwriting announcements here on Health 411. You are listening to 1077 The Bronc and 1077thebronc.com.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
1077 The Bronc, 1077thebronc.com. We're recording Health 411 from the Digital Bronx Studios. Welcome back. I am Professor Jonathan Karp. I got it right this time, Dan. And we are having a conversation with Troy Bannister. Troy is the CEO and one of the founders of Particle Health. Particle Health is a sort of a firm that is creating ways to connect our medical records across institutions and disciplines. And so at the end of the last segment, Troy was addressing sort of some of the issues involved with the diversity of the different ways that people store medical information. How do you get access to that if it's behind all these firewalls to start with?
So that's where this rule I was referring to earlier, anti-information blocking, comes in. Mm-hmm. And really what that means is if we partner with, let's just say, a hospital system or a virtual care application, like, you know, a telemedicine, for example, those providers have the right to access your data to use to treat you, right? In fact, we want to live in a world where your doctor mm-hmm. can access your health history. So essentially what the government has said is if Teladoc wants data on the patients that they're managing, you have to give it to them now. And so when we partner with a group like Teladoc, I'm just mm-hmm. using them as an example, we can then go to the organizations that have all this data and say, you have to give it to us now. You have to give it to us because we're going to help treat patients on the other side with it.
Okay.
And that's really the premise of the anti-information blocking rule.
And the nice thing about, I'm going to put words in your mouth, but tell me if I'm wrong, is that it's a federal law. So it allows you to go, so the state regulations don't get in the way. Am I
correct? It is a federal rule. It supersedes most of these policies. Yes.
Okay. And one of the things that I am aware of in my own world with having like bank accounts and brokerage accounts is the service where I can monitor the activity or balances. If I'm in one bank, they can monitor, you know, what's happening on the other bank. And is that the analogy? So sort of in real, are the records there for medical? Are they in real time just like that?
That's right. So if you go to your primary care doctor and then a specialist somewhere else, they should have up-to-date information, right? There's no transferring of records or doing anything. It just is automatic. It flows from one system to the other. No one even knows it's happening. And that can come with alerting, right? So let's say you have a lab test that comes back and it shows something kind of precarious. That can automatically alert your primary care doctor down the street and have them prompt you to come in for, you know, a medication dispense or something, right? So there's all sorts of stuff that can't exist today, because it's just not all connected. So we have to connect it before we can start building things that make
Is part of that connection to pharmacists? I'm just going to expand the world of healthcare. Social workers, therapists. You know what I mean? How big is the umbrella of healthcare in your definition of it?
I mean, it goes beyond traditional healthcare, right? So like even, I mean, I don't know about you, but if you've ever signed up for a life insurance policy, mm-hmm. one of the things you have to do is go get all your medical records for them. And that can take months and cost a lot of money. And what if you didn't have to, What if it was just right. a click of a button?
It's even an unnecessary blood test.
Example,
yeah.
Right. But
yeah. Wow. So, okay. So if you're going to bring up the life insurance policy world about it, how you talked about the portability in the HIPAA, but I think there are people who are going to not want their medical information getting into the wrong hands, or people they don't want to know what's going on. Are there protections? Are there protections like in your software where you can limit what they can get, what somebody who accesses the system can get to?
Short answer is yes, but really, what the most important thing is you're already sharing your medical records with these groups, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're applying for a life insurance policy, you're doing it. You have to do it. They won't give you a policy unless they get your medical records. It's just easier now. So there's that, you know, big difference as it relates to not sharing with folks you don't want. It's all consent and permission based.
Okay.
Right? So it is you deciding to share your medical records with a third party and nobody else.
Is it all or none, or can I only want to share this aspect of it or this time frame kind of thing? How does that work?
So we have a solution called filtered outputs that will essentially block access to some types of data. And that's already inherent in the way that everything's structured. There's a rule called 42 CFR Part 2 that protects some information in your medical record more than other things. And it's things like mental health history, right? There's some cases where that should not be shared.
Correct.
And so that's already, these permissions and these granular permissions are already built into policy and data.
Yeah, because I can imagine people not wanting their employer digging in to both their mental, their medical history and their mental health history, it might prevent you from getting a job because they're saying, oh, this person is going to cost us a lot of money.
So your employer should never get your medical records, right?
Right. I would think so, yes.
The groups that have privileged access are called covered entities.
Okay.
And a covered entity is either a provider, you know, like at a hospital, or an insurance company that is covering your policy. Those are really the only two covered entities out there. Everybody else does not get access to your data without any special, you know, reason.
So how does the UI look? Is it like an app? Is it a website? Can you make an account with it? How does that work?
So if you've ever, we were talking about Plaid earlier, Plaid has no UI, right? People build UI on top of it. And so that's the same way Particle is. We have no UI. Mm-hmm. People are building applications, websites, tools on top of our products. We are not building the products themselves.
Mm, so you just serve as the framework for all these other people to work with, essentially.
Yep. We're an API, right? So an application programming interface. And that means if you build an app or a web app or a tool or whatever, you just plug in. It's just like a socket that you connect into. And once you plug into that socket, the data can flow back and forth.
And so that then it will show up in a format that the people are used to seeing in their home systems. And so I looked at your website too. And when one of the phrases on there that caught my eye was no new screens. Is that what you guys mean by that?
Well, one thing with doctors, right, is they are inundated with more clicks, more screens, more tabs, more to-do lists. That is the worst thing we could do, is say, hey, here's another thing for you to go have to deal with. And so the premise is we can get those data points into your currently existing screens and workflows. So you don't have to do anything. It's just more relevant information where you need it.
Wow. Now, this is interesting because I forget what the recent data is, but I remember seeing a paper a number of years ago now that said something like 38%, let's just use the number 40 for discussion purpose, 40% of patients do some sort of complementary and alternative medicine, and they don't necessarily tell their physicians about it. How does that work in your system?
We're connected to something like 93% of the electronic medical record vendors out there today. Okay. And so if any of those alternative providers are on one of those systems, we would be able to pull it and then share it back with the primary care doc.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep.
And so that would sort of break down that barrier, which has risks. Right. I mean, if you're taking some herb or something that might interact with some medicine that's being prescribed, which is a potential
might
health
be
risk.
Good for your PCP to know that.
Yeah, but people are sometimes embarrassed to say, oh, by the way, I'm old. So they say, oh my God, I'm eating all this St. John's wort. Why isn't my SSRI working kind of thing?
I'm going to be honest, that's a pretty important thing to discuss with your PCP.
Right,
you know?
Right. But the reason I bring it up is a large percentage of people, when surveys are done anonymously, don't tell their primary, their GP, what's going on with that. And right. I was shocked when I saw those sort of numbers. And this might be an easier way to have that information where the person doesn't actually have to say it, but the physician can actually see it. and what's going
on. Or even not see it, but be raise an alert if there is an issue, right? That's where it starts to get very interesting. We don't have to just display all the data in thousands of pages in front of the doctor. We don't even need to necessarily tell them explicitly about the St. John's wort, but if the system can indicate your SSRI med and the John's wort are both active today, that could just throw a flag for the provider to look at, right? So there's a lot of ways to think about it.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Now, I'm impressed here because for somebody who started down the pre-med path, went to medical school, decided it wasn't the right thing, you're not talking like a physician here. You're talking like a business capitalist, entrepreneur, venture capitalist. And so, like, we have students listening who might be on the same pre-med path that you were, but you made a transition in the way you're thinking about the world and what you're doing. Was it just that the pre-med wasn't a good fit, or did you actually have to change the way? And what would you say to a student who's sort of struggling with, oh my God, I'm pre-med because I have to be, kind of thing?
You know
what I'm getting at here, hopefully.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know. One of the hardest decisions I've ever made, I probably waited too long before I made it. I think it was, in retrospect, a really excellent experience, right? The honesty I had to have with myself, right? The getting to know myself component. And then also making a big, hard decision that costs a lot and being yes. okay with that and just being comfortable with and happy with the decision I made, right? So a lot of lessons in there. I'd say, like, what happened to me was I was a year and a half into the program, and I recognized that there was a chance I wasn't going to get the specialty that I wanted. I was very interested in emergency medicine.
Oh.
And the minute I realized that I might not get that, I recognized I might not be happy as a primary care doctor, right? And if that's true, I might not be in this for the right reason. And so that was the aha moment for me. And of course, it was followed with, you know, weeks and or months of
agony. Well, I have to ask you this too.
Identity crisis.
Yeah, because one of the things I do as a biology professor is I talk to students who want to be pre-med, and I happen to be the pre-med advisor here at Rider University. And one of the things I say to the students is, you know, if you get to the point and you have an interview with a medical school admissions committee, one of your jobs is convince them that you know what it is and you really, really want to do it. But you're nodding. It sounds like you did that, right?
Well, everybody goes through the motion, right? I think it becomes a great challenge, right? The whole process of doing the classes, taking the MCAT, getting interviews, writing, it becomes this great, immense challenge. And I think people get wrapped up in the challenge itself. And I remember reading hours of blogs about how to interview at med schools and this interviewer versus that interviewer. And you're lucky if you get this one. I was so down in the weeds around the tactical, how do I get in and how do I, you know, accomplish my mission here versus the bigger picture of, like, who am I and what do I want to look like in 20 years of my life, right? Like, I was so sucked into the challenge, which I think, by the way, is an intrinsic characteristic of a lot of people that decide to go to med school in the first place. They're very challenged and oriented and they're, you know, relatively intellectual and willing to, like, dig in and figure out the puzzle.
Yeah, like, they want to prove they can do it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to follow that up because I see a link here with taking on challenges and being in the world of venture capital. But we're going to take a break for some underwriting announcements. We'll be right back on Health 411. You are listening to 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7thebronc.com.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronc, 107.7thebronc.com. We are recording from the Digital Bronx Studios. Welcome back to Health 411. We are continuing our conversation with CEO Troy Bannister. Troy is the CEO of Particle Health, based in New York City, and he's telling us about his background, how he got into sort of this electronic health records access for freely access, using the analogy of what we can all do now with our financial records. And at the end of the last segment, when I asked him about the challenges of going through the steps of taking pre-med classes, doing well, going to medical school, he brought up that the challenge was something that really goosed him and got him excited, even though he originally wanted to be an emergency room physician. And so I'm wondering if the challenge of starting a company, raising money, selling other people on your idea, is that a connection, an analogy there for students who might be thinking, like, you know, I like challenges, but the only ones I really know are academic and sciencey nerdy stuff?
I love the challenge. Yeah. Obsessed with the challenge. I think that's the whole point. Is you know, if I wanted it easy, I wouldn't have done this. This has been the hardest thing I've ever done in my life by leaps and bounds. But incredibly rewarding. Learned a million and a half lessons along the way, and would have changed a single thing.
Cool. You know? Now, does anything that you've learned, that you learned along the way, doing all the STEM stuff you had to do, even some stuff in medical, has that helped you in the world of venture capital? And I'm going to add to that, and you can take it anyway, convincing other people to come on board with you, which you have, because if you look at your website, you've got, you know, 20 or 30 people there that you've convinced to come work with you now.
Well, so going back, I did venture for like 2 or 3 years. Okay. And during that time, it was all healthcare. And so I was able to use my learnings to evaluate the efficacy of some of these, you know, these solutions that people were trying to fundraise against. So I could think about it from a clinical standpoint to a degree. Never an acting, you know, provider. So I couldn't like put myself in the work day to day, but I could understand what they were trying to achieve and how they would measure it and things like that. Now outside of venture as the CEO of Particle, we've got, I think 50 plus people going on 60 now. And
great.
The challenge, has changed, right? I'm no longer really in the weeds thinking about how the data is used by a provider. You know, we have product folks and engineers, and we have a MD on staff. We have a physician. And so we've hired people to do a really good job.
I'm going to use the language of academia. You become the PEI now who writes grants.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. It's much more armchair quarterback here.
Right.
I think, the thing that I did learn though, from doing, you know, pre-med and grad school and getting the master's and stuff is just how hard you have to work. I think that was my wake up call. When I got to grad school, I was knocked on my butt by how the workload and the expectations and the curve of the grade I had to do, you know, above average to even make it through. Mm-hmm. It was really, really difficult and competitive and stressful. And, you know, I came out on the other side alive. I had some scars. but when I walked into, you know, the idea of starting a company, it was kind of the same premise, right? It's here's a ton of work and you have to go do it yourself now, right? No one's going to tell you the stuff you have to go do. You have to self-organize, but you had to just do a ton, and it was stressful and there's pressure and it was competitive. It was very similar in many ways as it relates to the demand that mm-hmm. it asked for in order to be successful in it.
Right. And as a startup, it's 24/7, you know, your ideas and your potential to meet people doesn't take the weekend off.
You gotta take some time off. You have to. If you don't, you'll burn out and you'll crash and burn. You'll make bad decisions. You have to reserve some time for yourself. So it's a marathon, not a sprint.
That's a good way to look at it. So for students who might be listening, what kind of characteristics do you look for in people who you might be interested in hiring to come work for you?
I think number one is innate curiosity. People that ask questions, and you can tell, right? When you're on an interview, and you know, I always try to leave around 10, 15 minutes at the end to say, hey, do you have any questions for me? If there's no questions, I'm a little bit concerned, right? If I want to hire somebody that is really, really interested in the problem that we're solving and what we've built and how it works, I think that is the number one thing I look for is just curiosity.
I have a similar conversation with students all the time. Are there specific questions you're looking for, or does it really matter? It's just they're showing some sort of, they're engaged with their environment, what's going on, and they want to know.
You can tell when someone's actually curious, right? There's like an impatience there, right? They just need to know. And I've seen people kind of just run down the list of questions and be like, all right, thanks. That doesn't cut it either. I need to know that you're going to be, look, if when things get hard and challenges arise and you're overworked, the thing that carries you through is this persistence of curiosity. You just have to see the other side. You can't live without knowing what's going to happen on the other side. So that's the thing that I look for the most.
I wish I could, some of the students in my classes were hearing you say that. Professors often feel exactly the same way.
You can soundbite that anywhere you want. Okay. I give you full trademark permission on that.
that's quiet. There's a reason I'm in academia. I don't have to worry about that. So let's get back to Particle Health. And so we have a general idea of what the mission is and what your company offers. Who are the customers? Is it the health insurance, like the Aetnas of the world? Like who hires you to do this?
So we sell to provider-facing solutions.
Okay, so please explain what that means. Okay.
Doctors, nurses, and pharmacists are on the other side. So one customer you might probably recognize the name is One Medical. You might have heard of. One Medical is like a chain of clinics around the country. They just got bought by Amazon, I think, at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
They're a relatively large company. They're using us for actually exactly the use case that you just mentioned, which is when a patient walks into the door, no more paperwork to fill out. You just walk in and you're ready to go. They're also using us to flag things for the doctor. So when you go in, it will identify, oh, it looks like you had a prescription that ran out, you know, last month. Or, oh, it looks like your other doctor did a lab test and you're trending towards diabetes based on your history. So we can kind of pull that whole history of an individual and then serve up some notes, essentially, for the doctor to focus in on.
So that would mean anybody who uses that, who is part of that company's network, would have access to it. So individual physicians or individual pharmacies are not, you don't have the subscription service where they go in that way. It's coming. Yep. It's more a corporate. These are corporate contracts that filter down eventually to the providers.
Right. We sell business to business. Yep.
Yep. Okay. What does the future? So you found the need. This isn't being done. It should be done, but you're going to get better and better at this. What does the future hold in terms of medical access records?
I think two things. Okay. One is AI. I think AI is going to touch everything, right? And I think I can see pretty clearly how it's going to touch this problem. I'll give you a quick
stat.
Yeah,
you want to share?
Our average query through our API to go find someone's records, we have about a 90-91% success rate across the country.
And success means being able to find it, or if you find it, getting it right?
Both,
okay,
actually.
Okay.
Yeah. We've never gotten it wrong as far as we understand.
Good.
So that's the first part. We have a high success rate of finding records. The second piece is, on average, we find 155 unique documents per person. That's a lot of documents per person.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Over lots of years.
That's not helpful. Yeah. That's not helpful to a doctor sitting down with you for 10 minutes. So what we are interested in is, can AI summarize all that data quickly, efficiently, effectively, and translate it into a note or a summary or a sort of analytic product that drives the conversation and drives the care plan of an individual. And just, we use de-identified data in our back end. We've tried playing around with it, and it is scary good.
Oh, it's, is it? Okay. What you can find. Now, are the laws the same for medical information for children and adults? Or is there a special category for children's records?
There's differences between children and adults. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they are. What are they? Or do you need parental consent?
Mostly, it's mostly guardianship.
Okay.
So in order to, a child couldn't pull their own medical record, for example. It would have to go through an adult supervisor.
But could an adult pull their own record legally?
And then an adult also has the right to pull a child's record.
Not any child, but their child.
Not any child.
I'm kidding.
Actually a little loophole that we don't talk about in the regulations. Yeah,
the kid across the street I'm sort of curious about. what about, does a similar thing exist for the medical records on people's pets, dogs, cats, things like that?
Oh, funny you say that. There is a company that does exactly that. Yes.
I can't
remember the name of it.
Oh, interesting. We've
talked about creating a side, just for fun, of particle health, PAW, particle. But we've never made any moves on that.
Oh, it'd be a fun thing to talk about, like lunchtime kind of stuff. And so a big, what you're doing is you're talking about some of the federal laws you've had to learn about. And what was your introduction to the technology side of this? Because a lot of this is tech. Right? There's like financial tech, and here's like healthcare tech.
This is my first startup, right? I've never worked at a startup before. Never mind started or run one. So I had to learn on the way. I've had awesome technical folks on the particle team since day one. Okay. And
does that mean you had to learn the coding, like how to code? Is that what you're doing?
I've never coded a single line. I have no idea how to do it. What I do know is what we need to build and what it looks like, and then can work backwards with engineers and product owners as to like how to build it from day one to day 100.
So the analogy of the primary investigator sort of making the lab run, but not having to be in there doing the pipetting, doing the experiments kind of stuff. You're sort of running
that. And I shouldn't be, right? The CEO's got, there's a lot of work for me to be doing, and it should not be writing code.
Right. Your time would be better spent telling other people what you want it to look like and doing the coding for that. I want to take another break. We sort of have to for the end of this unit, but I want to continue this conversation with Troy Bannister. We'll be right back with Health 411. You are listening to 1077 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
1077 The Bronx, 1077thebronx.com. We're recording Health 411 from the Digital Bronx Studios on the campus of Rider University. We're having a conversation today, and continue our conversation with Troy Bannister, the CEO of Particle Health. As part of our conversation today, we've sort of, in addition to what Particle Health does, we heard about Troy's path to being one of the founders of the company. And can you tell us, like, how does one start this? If this pathway is attractive to you, how does one get into it and keep it going?
Well, I told you about curiosity earlier, right? And I definitely had this burning curiosity inside myself regarding the problem. And I think what I thought was, if this problem was solved completely, it might flip healthcare upside down, like in a good way. And that's a problem worth spending years of my life doing. And I think that we talked also about what was my thinking when being a doctor, right? The polar opposite, right, of how I was feeling about a direction. So this direction pulled me really hard. And it pulled me so hard that one day at work, I went into my boss's office and I said, I quit. No backup plan.
Were you at this point in the venture capital world? Were you in the clinical science world? Okay.
Yep. I just kind of quit on a dime, and I was like, I'll give you a week, I'll give you 2 weeks, I'll give you 3 weeks, whatever, but I'm done. And it was right. I just decided, sitting at my laptop one day in the middle of lunch, basically. And so I left, and you know, for the first couple months, I was just wandering around my apartment in circles, asking myself, what the hell did I just do? I had no money in the bank. I was eating ramen, trying to save money, and like hard-boiled eggs every day. And I thought, oh man, I better get started. So the first thing I did was I went to a coffee shop and I buy one cup of coffee in the morning. I use their Wi-Fi all day. And my goal was to fill up my calendar with phone calls. And the first week I had maybe a couple of calls that week. And then the second week I had, you know, 6, 7, 8. And then the third week I had 12, 13, 15. And by, you know, week 3, 4, 5, I had my entire calendar full of phone calls. And what I was doing on those phone calls with everybody I could get my hands on was just asking, basically pitching my idea, right? And seeing how they responded and digging in really deep. Why is that a bad idea? Why is that a good idea? Asking why over and over and over again. And after a couple months, I think I had like something with legs on it. And so I got into, I think anybody considering starting a company should do the pre-work, right? Of coming up with a really, you know, solid idea. Mm-hmm. Ideas are not worth much at the end of the day. It's the execution of that idea that matters. And so I think one of the best things you can do as an earlier first-time founder is join an accelerator or there's boot camps. There's all mm-hmm. sorts of these programs. There's tons of them. And they might not give you money, they might not give you resources, but they give you structure and they push you to convert that idea into action. And so I was lucky to get into an accelerator program. And that kind of kickstarted the whole thing. Started talking to the right people. I started hiring a couple people. We raised our first round of financing, which was around $2 million.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I'm hearing something that for people who might be intrigued by it that I think is important is that what you said was your ideas when you first started, you know, make, you know, a couple conversations, they were not completely crystallized. They had to sort of evolve. So you have to have the courage to share your ideas with other people. You can't let somebody say, oh, that's a, you know, if the first person you talk to says, oh, that's useful, you know, that's not useful, and give it up. So you have to have courage and you can't be fearful. You know,
I was equally like the mindset you have to have is you have to be equally excited about someone telling you that this is a bad idea versus somebody saying this is a good idea. They're equal, right? These are just data points that are nudging you left or they're nudging you right. They're both valid data points. And you're not going to get to the ultimate answer. In fact, you're never going to get to 100% of people being like, yes, do this. If you did, everybody would do it. It's that obvious. So there's never going to be clarity around, is this the right direction or move? It's all about iteration and pivot, quick pivots and quick, quick movements is really the goal.
Right. And so how long did it take from the time you started going to these incubator boot camps, talking about the ideas, to you actually had an interface with access to data that you could see if it worked?
It was about 10 months.
Okay.
I'd say from start to finish. The accelerator program is 3 months, which was, I think, 6 months of work went into those 3 months at that accelerator. You're in person every day, nonstop, with a group of people, all super friendly. By the way, that was a very fun time in the history of Particle, right? Like, it was the Wild West. I could have done anything, and I didn't care. And that was super fun. And then, you know, it starts professionalizing pretty quickly after you take venture capital in.
And then, is that where you met people who would give you access to these huge databases of information that you could start parsing?
Towards the end of that, yes. We had a plan. We had some rudimentary technology. We had a little bit of cash in the bank. And then we started doing our implementations and doing integrations into the data set.
So it sounds like your conversations were productive, not just on the conceptual idea, but you eventually met people who gave you a path in, because, you know, for me, if I wanted access to these medical records, I wouldn't even know like where to go, who to talk to or anything.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can kind of imagine how these conversations went. I was like, you know, talking to some expert in the field. I'm like, I want to build one platform that can connect and access everybody's full records. And you're like, okay, yeah, right, dude. Then the next one is like, oh, actually, I know a group that actually can give you partial access, right? They might have a third of what you're looking for, a quarter. Mm-hmm. So I get on a call with them. I'm like, how does this work? And they're like, well, it's expensive to plug into this. But yes, you can solve for a quarter of your problem. So then I can go to an investor and say, if I get this much money, I can pay for access and I'm a quarter of the way done, right? It's that kind of like non-linear, but somewhat directed.
So you found ways to open a door to allow you to beta test the technology to see if you could do what you wanted to do.
Right.
And you said that took about 10 months.
About 10 months.
How do you get investor money? Like, what is the strategy you use to pitch this to people with a lot of money and say, this is my idea, I think you should invest in this?
So I think there's when you're raising your seed round, which is like your first round of financing, right? There's two things that investors look for. The biggest and most important one is the team. They need to invest in a good team. And the reason is your idea and your technology and everything else is going to pivot, change. It's not going to be the same thing on year one as it is in year five. You're going to move things around and change directions somewhat. So they don't really care as much about like, this is what we want to build and here's our technology. They care more about, is this the best team that's going to figure this out the fastest? So when you're raising your seed round, that's the biggest, most important thing. The second is the story, the narrative, and the opportunity. Is this a $1 million opportunity or is this a $1 billion opportunity? If it's overwhelmingly large, like, we're going to connect everyone's medical records and there's going to be a whole ecosystem of things built on top of it. And we're going to flip healthcare upside down. That's very interesting to an investor, right? As opposed to like the market's $1 billion. And if we get a 10th of it, we're going to be great. That's not very interesting to a investor.
And so that's the language of return on investment that the venture capitalists are looking for.
Right. And if you think about how an investor works, which is not super common knowledge, they get, you know, they raise these big funds, maybe they're, you know, $500 million. And they get to make a certain amount of investments out of that fund. Say it's 20 investments or 30 investments into startups. They only want one of them to succeed. That's the model.
Well, they need one to succeed, but they would love to have more than one. Yeah, right.
That's why, though, they only will invest in companies that are swinging for the fences. They need one of those companies to hit a ball and they're good. That's the model that they operate on. It's not we need three or four mediocre companies. They want one or two giant companies. And so they only go for the giant ones.
So what did the learning curve and sort of the economics of this industry look like for you?
Healthcare?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm so much more knowledgeable than I was. I think the thing that I've learned a ton about is this concept of value-based care, where providers are now sharing risk with payers. And, you know, you use all these terms like risk and value-based care and direct contracting and all these things. Really what it means is if you're doing a good job as a doctor, you get paid more. And that model seems to be working really, really well. There's some companies that have been very successful doing that. And it's very complicated. It's not a straightforward, system. And so I've had to do a ton of learning there. And it's very interesting stuff.
Well, does the organization of the information that Particle Health creates, is part of it creating sort of a risk profile for the patients that would allow, I don't know, a bar to show up that's different colors or a number show up that would tell somebody, a healthcare provider, that high risk patient, low risk patient kind of thing using?
Yeah, we are building analytics on top of our services today. And so those analytics are looking at how often have you been to the ER in the last 3-4 years? Yeah. Have you been one time or 20 times? That is a clear indication of your ER risk next month. Right.
Yes.
So there's simple things that we can do. And then there's more complicated things we can do, which we're starting to do, which is like looking at your BMI and your GFR and your A1Cs and your blood pressure readings and the medications you're on, and actually constructing a more, you know, robust risk profile. That's much more complicated. That's starting to play into AI, ML, predictive analytics, things like that.
So you're the CEO. Where do you see the company in 5 years?
I think that these regulations will make all healthcare data completely liquid and fluid and accessible. And so what that means is if the data is accessible, it's a commodity now. It's really easy to go get it. And so just access to data is not going to be very valuable. What's going to be valuable is taking that data and creating something valuable from it in the form of insights, analytics. I think that will probably be accelerated incredibly fast by AI. That's what I think is going to happen. I think AI will be creating insane amounts of value from the new level of access that America has.
And I've got to ask this question because I'm listening to you and it made me think, is it possible that companies like Particle Health will replace the experience of having healthcare providers having to meet one-on-one with patients?
Never.
Never?
There will always be a human requirement in the healthcare space, I think. I think that what will happen is providers will be, you know, co-piloted by AI. I don't think anyone's going to be cool with just only interfacing with AI
with
in the future,
computer.
Especially healthcare.
Yeah. No max headroom here. Very cool. Very, very cool. Great. Unfortunately, we're out of time at this segment. Thank you, Troy. This has been a great conversation. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. This is 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7 TheBronc.com. We're recording from the Digital Bronc Studios. Thank you for listening to Health 411. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider University efforts to bring people together to address issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. I want to thank again Troy Bannister, CEO of Particle Health, for giving us our insights into digital healthcare and what it might look for in the future and sort of the progress of what Particle Health is doing and moving forward. Thank you again, Troy.
Thank you.
You've been a great guest. Do you have questions and or comments about this program or want to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronc.com/health411 to listen to past episodes or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the weekend rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 107.7 The Bronc is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.